Welcome, everybody. This is Mike from ProThink.org Radio today. We have a great interview for you today. We're going to talk to Daryl Bradford Smith of IamTheWitness.com, and we're going to get into a few topics today. One of the ones that Daryl's really good at informing people on is the economy, and I'd like to welcome Daryl you on the show today. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mike. Nice to talk to you again. How are you, my friend?
Doing wonderful. A little cold up in these parts. How about by you?
Well, we've been having 100-mile-an-hour winds here for the last 12 hours, and, you know, stuff flying by the front of the house here, blowing into the next yard and stuff, so I mean, there's an unexpected storm, but I guess that happens in March, doesn't it?
Yeah, March brings some funny things, some very funny things. Now,
including Purim.
Yeah, that was one of the things we were going to bring up, because that's something that we were talking about a few days ago, and I didn't even have a lot of knowledge on that. It's something, I guess we can start off with that right away, and then we can get off into the South American thing going on, and we can get off into the economy. But kind of explain to the listeners what Purim is and why it means so much to these people.
Right. Purim is the Jewish holiday that celebrates the defeat of their enemies. Now, I don't know any other religion that celebrates defeating enemies except Judaism, which in itself is not a bad thing, except the Purim celebration has taken on dimensions that it coincides with a lot of invasions in our world. If you notice, two of the last invasions we had in the Middle East corresponded almost directly with Purim. And so, yeah, this is a period to be very watchful of events in the Middle East, and of course lately with the ships lining up off the Lebanese coast, we've got several American warships off there and saber rattling, and the Israeli government telling their citizens to get dig underground, they're telling them, or something.
Get their rocket rooms ready.
But anyway, it's the Feast of Esther or something, where they defeated the Persians. But what it's come to be known as, in my mind, is that they've got something up their sleeve, and it looks like that may be the case again this year. So we'll have to wait and see. It starts, I think, on the 20th of this month. Yeah, so we've got about 10 days, 10 days, I guess, right now, from now, before Purim starts, so hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. It may be on our doorstep soon.
Now, one of the things I've been trying to get people to get behind it and get some support behind it was this AIPAC trial thing. I've been trying to get the word out there that we need to show some support to get these people that are tied up in this AIPAC spy ring trial, because a lot of these people that are tied up in this trial were also tied in 9/11. And one of the interesting things was the FBI investigator for 9/11 was going to be in this case too. And I don't know if you heard about this, but the lead prosecutor, I believe his name was Kevin DeGregory, just dropped out and was bought and sold for to go work for a company. I believe it was a realty company or a law firm or something like that. He just dropped the case. And they bought and sold him out. And, I saw that, and I said, I can't really blame the guy, because nobody got behind this case. There wasn't any light being shined on it at all. And, you know, now we dropped the ball on this. But, you know, what do you foresee happening with this AIPAC spy ring trial?
Well, first of all, it's not the first one that never came to fruition. You know, there have been spy situations with the Israelis for decades, and the only case that I know that ever really did go the distance was the Pollard case, because, you know, we've got other members of the administration committing acts of spying. This guy, Sandy Berger, a Zionist Jew from the Clinton years, was walking out with top secret documents stuffed down his pants, and nothing happened with him. But this particular case you're talking about, you have to understand that the entire Congress, and you've had the unfortunate experience, but it was beautiful to watch of facing off with Sensenbrenner and this Feingold guy, but they're just two of the whole. The rest of them are in the same boat. I mean, there's no way there's any appetite with the criminal Zionist movement in our Congress and Senate to do any of this, especially since, you know, the Zionist Jews are protected in Washington. Outside of Washington, it's a different story, but, you know, federal charges and federal prosecutions for spying against the Jewish community almost never go anywhere. It would be nice if we could get some you know, some press coverage, and by that I mean more alternative press coverage. But you mentioned the other day in our phone call that most of these sites, and it's absolutely true, most of the sites out there claiming to be alternative media sites are in fact, you know, that's just subterfuge and nonsense. The Daily Kos and this, what's this one there, that Bolin was always writing on with Raelian and everything.
The Rumor Mill News.
Mill News. Why not just say CIA Central News?
Yeah.
Or this MoveOn.org or all these other ones. In other words, the alternative press that everyone thinks is telling them the truth should be behind this, but there's no truth coming from these people. There's only a handful of sites willing to even step up to these facts. So I don't think it's going anywhere, but you know what? It'll be just one more thing we can point to when the final, you know, judgment does come down on our behalf that they were criminals, and take a look how many times in the past they've been criminals, because frankly I don't see a prosecution coming out of it. But I may be wrong. I hope, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but
well,
I don't think so.
If you look, they got Michael McKenzie in there now, and obviously he's running the show being an attorney general, so yeah, because it's not.
Have you ever seen a dumber looking guy? I mean, this is, you know, only him and W, you know, I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's pretty brain. He looks pretty brainless. Now, to move on to the South American thing, because that was turning out to be a hot issue, and now it looked like it sizzled out. But some of the key points were that Colombia received $3.3 billion in military aid from the United States to basically, it looks like, to start some trouble with Venezuela and Ecuador, and they ended up starting with the FARC leader there. But it came just recently in a summit that Chavez and who's the Ecuador president?
Correa
and Uribe from Colombia all basically put this to rest now. And is this looking like a big middle finger up to the United States from Colombia now that they got the money?
No. I don't. In fact, I've never trusted Chavez, to be honest with you. The fact is that communism is still an instrument of the Zionist movement, and whether or not it follows the exact pattern of all previous communist regimes or communist insurrections, you know, hand in hand with Jewish control, it still was born in their control. And if you take a look at a place like Cuba, you know, that you don't know this, or maybe you do, but Fidel Castro is a Murano Jew.
Yep.
So the fact is, do I trust this guy, Chavez? No. There was a lot of grandstanding going on, but what you need to also understand is that there is an indigenous population in Ecuador hoping to benefit from the natural resources of their country, being oil has been discovered there, as well as gold and other natural resources. And some of the discoveries are quite powerful, one of them being a gold find in the 20 million ounce range. And, of course, you know, gold is one of the things that these people covet. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me to see a false declaration of war get started, where Colombia uses its American weapon systems that have been given to it, billions worth, to beat the tar out of those two countries, because, frankly, neither Venezuela or Ecuador have the chops to be fighting with Colombia. They just simply don't have the manpower, they don't have the machinery and equipment, and they just don't have the numbers. Colombia would kick their fannies really bad. And so what you would see there is just a confiscation of you know, of things. Now, there's a history of them having taken over a country when large resources were discovered, and that happened down in South Africa with the Boer War. When large gold and diamond fields were discovered there on farmland that was run by Afrikaners, the Rothschild and Oppenheimer gang sent down the British Army to beat the tar out of these white farmers and took the country over, and then put a monopoly lock on the natural resources so that they would benefit over generations, the gold and diamonds coming out of South Africa. So are they willing to take that kind of move again in Ecuador and in Venezuela? We'll have to see, but that's something to watch for sure.
Now, one of the things I noticed that kind of made me question whether Hugo was with these people or against these people was not too long ago he had sent in military police to quote-unquote arrest Jewish subversives in his community there. And this was maybe about a month and a half ago. So I was, kind of looking to be like, you know, well, is he playing with these guys or is he playing against them? And that kind of sign was looking to be like, you know, maybe he's not playing ball with them.
Well, here's the other side of it, Mike. You know, the same can be said about Putin. Putin has gotten rid of some of the oligarchs from the Jewish mafia. But then on the other side, he just appointed his successor, who was from the Jewish community, and they wanted to keep that quiet. He's done deals with Rothschild and then turned around and got rid of some Rothschild friends. He's been buying gold on the open market, which is generally reserved for the criminals in the Rothschild bank gang. And so you don't know, but I do know this. I know neither Chavez nor Putin have come out on the world stage with details about the Israeli participation in 9/11. Neither of them. Neither of them have come out and talked about Levon Affair or about the Liberty or about the crimes of criminal Zionism or about the Rothschild's involvement in the world or about Oppenheimer's involvement or Brockman or so forth. My point being is that these people have a stage to do their strutting on. Why is it that neither of them, if you think they're against all this power movement in the world, why aren't they speaking up? So I don't know, because I'm not privy to the things that motivate them, except to see it from the Western press's opinion, and I don't trust the West's opinion of them, and I don't trust what I see with my own eyes anymore. I mean, I'm a skeptic almost 100% these days. So it's anybody's guess at this point.
Now,
that's all I can tell you.
Now, is there looking at the nations around the world? Is there any nation that you see that is openly using their stage against this criminal network here?
Well, there was one, and then their leader retired. And if you remember back in the 90s when the Asian Tigers were imploded by, it started out with a revaluation of the ruble. And as the ruble was revalued, it caused a cascading effect in emerging markets. And what happened was all of the Asian countries that were doing very well for 10 years, Indonesia and Vietnam even, and Malaysia and so forth, went belly up. They went into free fall. Now, the only country that chose to keep its own solutions at home and not go to the World Bank and IMF for their assistance was a country called Malaysia under Mahathir Mohamad. Now, in order to get him out of his office, they sent a guy over there and tried to undermine his control. And Mahathir Mohamad put the guy in jail, essentially, this guy named, I forget his name, Asmar or something, whatever. But anyway, as it turned out, he was able to resurrect the economy in his country within 2 years, whereas the countries that signed up to IMF World Bank have never really come out of that the same way. They have, and they're still in mountains of debt in Indonesia as a result. So Mahathir also would get on out there and talk about the murderous rampages going on around the world at the hands of Zionist Jews. You must also understand, though, that Malaysia is the most populated Muslim country in the world, I believe. It's either that or Indonesia, one of the two. But it's got a huge Muslim population. But he was the only honest broker. Now, he's in his 80s, still gets up there and talks about it. His successor hasn't been so bold. So, I mean, I'm sure you could melt away into Malaysia, into a nice community over there and not worry about being victimized by Zionists. It's probably the only country in the world you could say that. But I see them their big push now is to flatten America's future, destroy it, make us into a second world country, and then bring India online as their new America. They're pumping up the business over there. They're investing heavily in India. There's Rothschild investment in the tens and hundreds of billions to get India to emerge as a superpower in the world. And you will see India growing exponentially in the next years here as America falls. You know, America may end up resembling the 1917 communist regime in Russia. where they closed the borders. They set up internment camps internally. They allowed nobody to come and go freely. There were internal passports in the country. All the things that we've all been worrying about in America were all set up in Russia back in the turn of the last century. So it looks like that may be a possibility for our futures. And based upon what I know about finance and seeing money systems go south, it looks like that we're heading in that direction. But again, you know, trying to be a soothsayer of future events, Mike, is not easy, huh? I mean, you can only take a look at what's around you and try to guesstimate the actions that are happening, you know?
Yeah, and that's why it's important to look at the history of what they've done, because it's like you said, they're pretty much using the same game plan that they did in Russia, where they basically, you know, got into government and hijacked a lot of key positions and then ran their own game plan on the country and ensuing used it for everything it was worth, and then once they were done with it, they threw it in the trash bin.
Well, and at the same time, though, yes, they were actually funneling American money into Russia the whole century. During the 1930s, 40s, 50s, there was large sums of American money being sent over there to aid that regime's control over its public. And what they kept locked up there were its natural resources. Why? Because we know that Russia has huge gas reserves, timber reserves, oil reserves. It's the largest country in the world, and it's situated across 11 time zones. And they did not want to reduce the value of their present market holdings. In other words, if you put 30 years ago, had you put Russian oil on the market, you know, oil for gasoline for your car would have cost you 4 cents a gallon. So they kept the Russian materials off the market, and it wasn't until the world began to find shortages in some wood and gas and some other things that they allowed Russia to reemerge with all of its natural resource wealth to start filling the void of supply in the world. Now, you know, some say that Putin is anti Abramowitz and Berezovsky and the rest of them and the oligarchs, but it seems to me that he let them walk away with $10, $20, $30 billion each. I don't know that that sounds like he's against them very much. they all seem to have done very well. The Jews that left there that were in league with Rothschild all left Russia with billions. So who knows about that one either? All I can tell you is that America is resembling it, and the man who set up our internal camp structure came over as a consultant. He's dead now. He died of a heart attack in the last 2 or 3 years. Was the same man who ran the Gulag system in Russia. His name was Yevgeny Primakov. And you also will note that the person who was doing our snitching program, you know, call up on your neighbor if he pees in his bushes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that watch, neighborhood watch stuff, that was set up and pushed forward by a guy named Marcus Wolf, both of them Zionist Jews from the Eastern European bloc. And, you know, this guy Wolf was a Stasi specialist. So Stasi was the most successful secret police the world's ever known. So they went to the best in their criminal network to help them set up America's future. Whether or not we will become victims of that future, I guess I can't tell you for sure, but I do know things are lining up to look rather terrible as far as I'm concerned. I mean, anybody taking a look at what's going on in the world has to be worried. I certainly am.
Well, there's been three things I've been looking at, three key issues that I've been looking at that we've, in America, have had a benefit over what Russia had back then. And one of them being is that now that they've created their state of Israel after they went through their Russian ordeal there, is that a lot of these people that are ingrained in our government here in the United States claim citizenship to Israel. So it's really easy to identify a lot of these people now. And it's easy to look at them and say, well, you have foreign ties with another nation now, another nation that you're pushing a lot of foreign policy, which Russia didn't have back then because, you know, these people were just running undercover more or less instead of being out in the open. Another thing we have in America is the flow of information on the Internet, and that's another benefit. Whether or not it's going to help us, you know, these are two or the three tools. And then we have the history of their game plan, what they did in Russia, that we can look back that's documented so well, like books like Andrew Dyke that you have on your website at I Am the Witness.
Yeah.
So we have these three tools, you know.
Well, Mike, I got to say that you know, you're right with that dual citizen thing and the Israeli influence. And here's the interesting thing. If you asked somebody with it that wasn't aware of all this stuff and just asked them, you know, simple question. You know, we have 6 out of 10 leaders in George Bush's government who are from China. They're dual citizen American Chinese and they're Chinese. Does that worry you, 6 out of 10? Somebody would say, absolutely. But why is 6 out of 10 Chinese involved in the leadership of the president's executive?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you know that the Chinese were the number one donors to congressional campaigns across the country, including in state campaigns? Everybody'd go, oh, my God, that's horrible. We can't allow that. Or if they said, how about all our federal judges happen to be from the same group, and they're all Buddhists? You know, if you ask these questions to an American in that light, they'd all be shocked and appalled and say, yes, I'm worried. But the fact is that same statistic fits exactly with what Zionist Jews have been able to accomplish in America. And yet, when you ask that simple question to somebody, they have a Pavlovian response to recoil from you because they've been indoctrinated with this, you know, this gut reaction that whoever asks them a question like that has to be an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that television has bombarded their brain with for 30 years. And it's very hard to unprogram somebody or deprogram somebody from that kind of reaction. As long as I've been doing this now for years, I've been doing this stuff, there are people around me, if I bring up the word Jew. Now, of course, you happen to know as well as I do that not all Jews are involved in this, but mm-hmm. if I bring up the word Jew to refer to the religion, people get nervous right away. It's all about propaganda, and it's all about human nature here. And I'll tell you, our nature is to be fearful of things that could possibly get us embroiled in some kind of debate that's uncomfortable. People don't want that. However, I think that the kinds of events that are in our future are going to force people to look at who's done this. I don't think when you're scraping on the ground for food, Mike, you're going to want to know who the heck did this to you.
Exactly.
It would be my hope, anyway.
Now Daryl, I got to tell you, you hit a key topic there, and this is one of the things I've been pushing for people that are like in the 9/11 movement, instead of going around, you know, pushing Bush did 9/11 and blah blah blah. I've pushed to the biggest icebreaker, and you hit it almost on key with what I normally do to break the ice with people on this that don't have any clue what's going on. Is I like to bring Chertoff into the mix, and I go, you know, if you understand that Chertoff was investigation of the 93 bombings, was also involved in the 01. World Trade Center attack, but you also bring up his mother and the fact that he's dual citizen and
yep.
illustrate how much control he has over the security. And once I do that, you know, I go, hey, well, you know, Chertoff's mother was one of the founding members of the Mossad. This same Mossad at the time was doing the Levant Affair, which was admitted. So Michael Chertoff's mother was in an organization that was involved in terrorist acts against the United States. And then you bring into the USS Liberty. Now, I usually, for the people that are not completely just mind closed, like you said, they hear anything they do with that and they close their mind. But I find that to be probably the best icebreaker for anybody out there that, you know.
Well, there's other evidence, too. I'll give you one that I've brought up a few times. Just before the attacks in 2001, by the Israelis on us. There was a gentleman, not a gentleman, I shouldn't call him that. There was a dirtbag up in the Finger Lakes region of New York who had already strutted his credentials on the world stage while in Iraq during the 90s and everything. His name was Scott Ritter. Now, Scott got caught at a Burger King trying to get a young girl to, I guess, watch him masturbate, believe it or not. And he was charged with it. They mugshotted the guy and everything. And he had a profile of credibility in his discussions with, you know, about Iraq. In other words, he was the weapons inspector for ANSCOM and all this other stuff. Well, lo and behold, this is a state case now, not a federal case. A state case in the Finger Lakes District of New York. Who comes up to have his record sealed and the case sealed so that the press can't even read the outcome? Michael Chertoff comes up just on in June of 2001. Now, why would a Michael Chertoff come from the District of New York's New Jersey branch up to the Finger Lakes District of New York and have this man's record sealed? And then, subsequent to that, every report this guy gives says that the Arabs are responsible for 9/11. Now, he gives good information about a lot of stuff, and then he gets you to the punchline, and the punchline always is, Islam is angry at us because of what we did to them. And that's his punchline. So, you know, this, why would Chertoff be involved in that? I mean, it's just one more example of this guy running around peddling influence, and it's also the man they keep away from criticism. He's a Skeletor Chertoff is a very, very dangerous guy, trust me.
Yeah, he's probably enemy number one in this country, I'd have to say.
Oh, boy. You know, messing with Skeletor is playing with fire, I got to tell you. But anyway, that's what I see. Now, you know, him and Rahm Emanuel and who's the other guy they got there? Oh, yeah, Howard Dean, the head of the Democrat Party now, Howard Dean, also Jewish. And these people are very, very, very dangerous folk. There's no doubt about it. So, you got to be careful with what these folks are doing. There's no doubt. But anyway, yeah, that enough said on that subject, I guess.
Now, as far as, I'd like to kind of swing over because I don't think it's been enlightened enough to a lot of people out there that are still. But what's the tie with Rahm Emanuel and Michael Moore? Which is kind of got my head on that page right there, because there's still a lot of people out here that think that this, the movie this guy's pushing, he's got some kind of truth in there, but isn't he somehow related to Rahm Emanuel or his producer?
Well, the agent for Michael Moore, the agent for Moore, is Rahm Emanuel's brother, in fact. And so, now, of course, you know that Hollywood and the whole production thing of documentaries, films, movies, any kind of television show, all of that stuff is tightly controlled. So, yeah, the guy, and I think Michael Moore, somebody told me Michael Moore was Jewish and from the Jewish community. Now, again, you know, whether somebody's from the Jewish community is immaterial to the facts, in my view. Is he a Zionist? Well, how we judge people is from the fruits of their effort. Is he obfuscating? Is he turning people away from facts? Is he leading you to believe false things? Well, yes, and all three of those questions, I say absolutely. And the simple truth is that yes, he has connections to that criminal gang. So, yeah, Michael Moore's no bloody good. That's all I can tell you.
Now, one of the hardest things when we learn all this kind of information is to come up with solutions. Now, you've been looking at this for a long time. For Americans that are learning about this stuff and want to take some kind of action, take the role of being taking action, what are some of the ideas that might help in this? What are some of the solutions that Americans can do at this point to some kind of recoup or downplay this actions that they're getting ready to take on here?
Well, I think the most important thing is to strengthen themselves so that they can be, first of all, you know, the family has been destroyed by these people. The television set has destroyed our ability to even think rationally, I think, about how families are supposed to be in our lives and how relationships are supposed to be. First of all, shut the television off. That's the first thing you need to do. The second thing you need to do is become active, not pensive. Don't be sitting there thinking all the time about what you need to do. Go out and do it. Meaning, you got to have a garden started right now. You've got to take control of the things you put in your body, such as foods no more processed food and no more MSG food and no more foods that are going to make you obese. No more foods that are going to be full of chemicals. Stop using fluoride toothpastes. Stop drinking fluorinated water. Become a good example for the people around you, your family. If you're going to ask somebody to stop watching TV, don't be sitting back in the back room of your house watching TV. Open a book, read a book. There's plenty of books on the PDF files at I Am the Witness. There's plenty of other books out there that are helpful. Gardening books if you want to learn how to start feeding yourself. networking with other people in your area. It's very difficult to say networking internationally because I'm fearful of people being sucked into some bad guy. You know, there's a lot of bad guys out there. So, I mean, when you're making these relationships, state to state, and you don't know who you're dealing with, you could run the risk of being duped by a Zionist. But there are, networking things. What we've got to do is we've got to rebuild our strength from the bottom up because, frankly, we are not organized in any way. An organization, I think, that we could build has to come from the first building block of society, and that's the family. So, and then the second building block is health. You have to have a healthy life, and you have to have a healthy family, and you have to have a good, strong family unit. And you can take that to the next level. And what happens is people around you who watch you, and everybody watches everybody in this life, they'll watch the qualities of your life as being evidence as to the decisions you're making. You know, I don't think the idea that we're going to be able to grab a gun and fill it with bullets and go and fight is nonsense. Because what that'll get you is in a gun battle with some police unit somewhere. That's not going to be the solution. The solution has to be education. And if you are a disheveled kind of willy-nilly kind of fellow with a messed up family unit and bad health and the rest of it, people are not going to take the things you try to educate them about seriously. So all of this stuff, I mean, look, I think their days are numbered for one reason. There is a flow of history that is becoming clearer as the days pass, and that is that someone has done this to us, that all roads and all fingers point to the same place if you do any due diligence whatsoever, and that truth is finally starting to seep into the mainstream mindset. And I don't think it's reversible because, as I've said before, once you've been converted to the truth, there's no way you're going to go back underneath the cloud of lies that they've set up. See, deception and propaganda only work if you believe the stuff they're putting out. Once you've been converted to the truth, you can't be lied to anymore. It stops. So those are the things I would recommend right now, because we're facing survival issues coming up. I mean, there's food issues coming up. There's bill paying issues. There's people not having homes to live in coming up. I mean, these are all imminent and serious problems we're going to face in the short term, I think.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I think I've done. It was probably well over a year and a half ago, if not 2 years ago now, is I turned that TV off and I haven't looked back. And that leaves your head open to be informed on things that you're not just getting propaganda fed. Now, you still have to have your critical thinking skills when you go out and self-research to see through a lot of the crap that's out there. But, yeah, the best thing somebody could do, the first step, is turn that TV off. I mean, I'm actually getting rid of it. The only TV we have in the house, we're getting rid of it because we don't use it. It's just, it's garbage. Everything that's fed, you know, it's a funny argument. Somebody has told me, oh, you get your information from the internet. And they go, oh, the internet's full of crap. I said, well, that's funny. You get your information from TV. You think that's not full of crap?
You're right. I think they're both at some level full of crap, and I think they both can actually, there's actually truth in some things on television, and not everything on TV is bad. However, when you take it in its aggregate and see its effect on people, I think it's really a negative factor in all of our lives, and I think it keeps us away from being doers. Instead of being voyeurs of life, TV forces you to be a voyeur, whereas when you get rid of that box and you start having more time on your hands not to sit in front of an idiot box, you actually become more proactive about the things you're doing. You know, you're not sitting there 3 hours a day being sucked in. So, this is important stuff, I think.
Now, as far as one of your fortes here, the economy, I know you just did a great interview with Rafik, and that's on your website. But if you could break down in layman's terms, you've been calling some good shots on what's been going on with the economy, and this is one of the key issues to be able to see where their agenda is going is by looking at following the money. Now, if you could break down for our listeners here, what exactly has been going on just within the last couple of months. I noticed that the numbers came out that February alone was 68,000 jobs lost in America, and that's a big sign in itself. But what do you see that has happened and is going to happen within the near future?
Well, unemployment, first of all, is a lagging indicator, and what that means is that it actually shows up long after the original problems are surfacing. The leading indicators are things like interest rates and such like that. Now, let's discuss for a moment what's happening in the credit markets, because that's really the source of the problems. Of course, you know, they use the name credit, but every time that anybody goes to get some credit, it's formed as a debit or as a debt. It's a debt-based money system that we live under. The fact is that countries, companies, people, corporations, cities, all of them on a daily basis need to get money into their coffers to run different programs, to pay different benefits, to organize their rubbish pickup and such. And when they need money or they need to reorganize their debt because of bad ideas when they set up their billing structure, they go, oh, well, we don't have enough money this year, we need more. They have to go to the bond market. And the bond market is shut down for business. And we're talking about a $9 trillion business a year in the world. The bond market has failed, and it has failed because the rating system that was placed on bonds, which is in AAA, AA, AAA plus, AA plus, and so forth, was given those ratings because of an insurance policy that all of these bonds were required to have. The two major insurers, Ambec, the other one is MBIA, MBIA and Ambec are the two, are both insolvent. So all of the bonds that they underwrote with insurance have now gone from AAA to AA, which means that those are now riskier investments. What that means is that nobody in the world trusts anybody else's bond. So nobody's buying them. So if you're a city with no money in its coffers and you need to raise some money, you can't get it at the bond market. Nobody will lend it to you. So if you've made a mistake or you need to expand or you need some salary payments or you need some loan payments or whatever, so the gears of business have stopped in the world. And you're seeing the result of that, this implosion in interest rates. I'll give you another example. The Port Authority of New York went to the marketplace recently for a bond sale to get money to operate the Port of New York. Usually they used to pay a few percentage points above prime on their, let's call it discount. There's a discount coupon. On the bond auction, they ended up at 20 points, which was the most unheard of figure anybody ever saw in a bond price. In other words, these people, the bond price that was offered up upon the sale was so bad that anybody else wanting a bond didn't even bother bringing it to market. That's how bad it was. Now, this is not only happening in America, it's happening across Europe. You're noticing the only way that they can keep this Ponzi scheme that they've developed afloat is by this plunge protection team that the federal government set up under Clinton. It's being flushed with money, lots of money being poured into it, billions and billions, and it goes out into the world and tries to manipulate markets to give everybody the idea that things aren't as bad as they really are. Simple fact of the matter is they're far worse than anybody knows. And I believe within this month you're going to see things start to really erupt. They have already erupted in January and February, but I think now they can't hide them anymore. I don't think there's any way, with the way things have gone, that they're able to even cover up the depth of these problems. So that's not even including the subprime. I mean, I didn't even discuss the subprime problem. That's another offshoot of this in the billions, hundreds of billions. There's going to be another shooter drop on personal credit. There's another problem. We've got double-digit inflation coming into the system where people's salaries are not meeting their own costs and expenses. Where do you want to turn? It's a nightmare. That's all I can tell you. It's awful. And I think it all is going to translate into terrible suffering for the poorest among us. There's absolutely no way, looking at this objectively, that I can see poor people surviving this without terrible, terrible pain. And the middle class, I think, is going to be reduced to the poor class from these actions.
Now, some of the ideas for these people that are in the poor and middle class to do some damage control at this point, and they have to take it seriously, that the economy is going to take a big dump. And they have to consider this. And you know, Americans haven't seen the likes of this since the late 20s, early 30s of the Great Depression. So nobody is trained. You know, it's like I was talking to this lady at a grocery store yesterday. And says, you know, have you stocked up on the food? No, I go to the grocery store whenever we need something. Every time we buy extra food, yada yada, we don't eat it all. And I said, what about storables? Oh, no, you know. And so I tried to explain to her, you know, that, you know, it'd probably be a good time to start stocking up on food, but for those that want to listen and want to take this serious and want to do some kind of damage control, for instance, somebody that got into a subprime loan on a house or somebody thinking about buying a house at this point, what is the best source of damage control they can do at this point, you know?
Well, if they've got negative equity built up in their home, in other words, they owe more than the value of their house right now, I would say find new lodgings, find a new home, go live with mom and dad, and mail your keys in. Call your parents and say, look, I hate like heck at 30 years old to be coming and living with you with my wife and baby, but at the way things are right now, I'm asking with my hat in hand if that's possible. And I would get the heck out of the deal and turn the keys into the bank. And then I would start consolidating my personal debt and try to get out of it if I could. If I had a little more than that, if I had a little bit extra than that, let's say I had $10,000 or $15,000 to the good in my life, first of all, if you don't do anything except leave it in a bank account or leave it in dollars, you're going to have nothing left because, you know, people are going to be wiping their fannies with $100 bills, it seems to me, in the not-too-off future. What I would do with it is I would probably get into some Swiss. I would go to the bank and exchange it for Swiss francs. I would go to the bank, and if I could get my hands on it, I'd get Russian rubles. I would, if at the very lowest, if you've got a very low threshold and you want to have quick exchange ability, like I said, Swiss franc or even the euro, because they're all going to appreciate against the dollar. I would also take maybe five or seven thousand of that 15,000 and buy precious metals. At least half of the precious metals in gold, and I would buy coins and make sure that they were American coins so that they would be outside of the Confiscation Act of 1933. And the rest I would buy silver dollars, silver quarters, go to a coin dealer and pay a little bit over metal price, over the weight price of the silver so that you would have a few of, you know, silver available to you. And, why silver? Because, you know, when push comes to shove, if you need to do some negotiating in the marketplace a year from now and things have really gone belly up, you'd have a median of exchange that would be readily accepted. Why those currencies? Because they are going to appreciate against the dollar as the dollar continues to tank toward 52 or even below that on the basket of currencies internationally. So, yeah, that would be my money side of things. But getting out of the oppressing debt that you face would be the other thing. And invest yourself in the things that are going to help you limit your expenditure. In other words, a garden. You know, ask your parents if, and once you've moved back in with them, if you can turn a part of their backyard into a garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go out and buy some large bags of rice. You can go to a wholesale store and buy yourself 10-pound bags of rice and get some pastas bought in advance and. You know, dried beans, they last forever. You can keep dried beans for years. And learn how to start living without having to spend a lot of money. It's not that hard to do. You want entertainment, head over to your public library, get a library card and start reading some books and enjoying the taxpayer supplied entertainment that's available, such as libraries, and you know that's the unused resource in the country, the People's University, the library, full of all kinds of interesting things over there. Lots of stuff. Stop spending, and start pulling in the belt. Even if you've got money to spend, even if you've been spending, I would say stop.
Yep.
And get out of the dollar. Now that doesn't mean you don't leave yourself with a few dollars. I mean, you know, out of the 15,000, I would put 1,000 of it into cash. and use that as a as my float, as my money that I need on a regular basis. If you got some jerry cans that you can scoop up, go buy yourself maybe 40 or 50 gallons of gasoline, or if it's using diesel fuel, same amount of diesel fuel, so that when you need your vehicle, you have it there. And
now, Daryl, you brought up a good point. It's, as far as the library, too, it's an excellent point, because I actually picked up four different versions or four different books by Nesta Webster at the library, and I was quite surprised that he had those books there. But, you hit a nail on the head with a situation I have with a friend right now. He is actually above at about 15 grand in the good, and he's looking to buy a house at a market price that was like 2 years ago. And I've been trying to tell the guy, and he's like, well, where would I live if I don't get this house? I don't want to rent forever. And, you know, he's in that situation where he wants to buy a house. He's got good credit. He's sitting on 15 in the bank right now. And I'm explaining.
You want me to tell you what? Listen to this. If he puts his money in a Swiss franc or ruble account or even the euro, and he waits a year, he'll have 30 grand.
Yep.
And then he can go and go to one of these auctions with 30 grand in cash and maybe buy the damn house outright.
Exactly.
There you go.
Because he's coming in at a tail end of it's not even a tail end, it's a buyer's market already.
I doubt very seriously with $15,000 he would even get a bank to loan him the rest of the money. I don't think a bank would consider $15,000 a reasonable down payment. That's what I think.
Yeah. And as I told him, I said it's a horrible time to be buying a house, because I said, you know, his payments right now with the bank saying that it'd be about $1,300 a month. And I told him, I says, well, what's going to happen when you lose your job? You're going to put this all your chips in this basket, and you're not going to be able to cash out at the end.
Well, you can give him the facts. You can place them in front of him. You can say, please do your due diligence, read these things, get up to speed. And then if he doesn't want to listen to you, let him go.
Yep.
You can't save people that don't want to be saved, Mike.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's listening. And, you know, I'm just trying to enlighten him, because he's in that situation like you brought up where he could, you know, and he's definitely reconsidering buying his house. But that's just, you know, one person out there that, you know, trying to enlighten. But, so we're looking at this year probably for a pretty nasty economical collapse, which are going to lead into a lot worse things to come. And
well, it seems like it. And here's the thing. I don't know how much of it was planned for this date or how much of it just came upon the scene because of greed. I don't know. Again, you know, not being privy to the inner workings of the group that's mostly responsible for these problems. I mean, we all carry some guilt and responsibility for allowing this to get out of hand like this. I mean, we've been allowing these people to rape us financially and other ways for a long time, so we're partly to blame. But simple fact is that I can't give you dates and times, although I can tell you the financial structure itself is that it has reached beyond the breaking point. It is already broken and can't be fixed. It is a Humpty Dumpty situation where the only thing that they're able to do now, I think, is buy themselves a little more time. I don't think basically there's going to be anything or anyone or any policy or any miracle coming down the pike that's going to fix this. It's not fixable.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not looking pretty. You get prepared, huh?
There you go. That's right.
Wow.
That's right, Michael.
Well, I think we'll about lead it off there and let people chew on that for a while, and hopefully that'll help them out with some ideas and getting prepared for this too, because the inevitable is going to happen, and I don't think a lot of people are really taking it serious, and they really need to at this point.
So, I think you're right, and the most important thing I think anybody can do right now, again, is move toward family values that you knew as a kid, if you're an adult. Now, if you're in your 40s or 50s, try to strengthen what it is that you found valuable morally and emotionally when you were a kid, and try to bring those things into this next generation coming up. Get out of that television mindset and begin to start doing things that don't require money, such as gardening and the like, because those things will serve you in what I believe is on its way. The rest of it, I think, is nonsense anyway. What you're going to find out is getting the latest cell phone or buying the new Game Boy or Xbox or something is really an empty transaction in my view. And you know, start networking with people who have like minds, and you know, one of the side benefits of this is that we are going to get closer to the people we love, because it's clearly with what's coming, we can't survive on our own. And I think for the first time, the push toward individual over the family is going to actually get reversed, and that can't be anything but a good thing. So start moving toward being a better family member, and be a hero to your family if you're the man in the house, and be a great example if you're the woman in the house for your kids. This is all important stuff.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show today and doing an interview with us. And Daryl, for anybody who's would like to get a lot of great information, your site has an excellent amount of history on a lot of different topics here. And that website is IamTheWitness.com.
Yep.
And, yeah, like I said, we appreciate you being on the show today. Is there anything else you want to let people know?
Well, I just want people to take care of their families, Mike, and you take care of yours as well, huh?
You know we will.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, you have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye now.